Well, the 18-year-old man who killed 10 mostly black people in Buffalo, New York last weekend is set to appear in court facing hate crime and terrorism charges. He live-streamed his actions, gunning down innocent shoppers at a supermarket, all based on a manifesto brimming with racist ideas and images which he shared online before the attack. It included the idea called the Great Replacement Theory, a racist conspiracy that in turn has been amplified by outlets like Fox News. Erica D. Smith is a columnist with the Los Angeles Times newspaper. She's been writing about this. I asked her about that conspiracy.
This is an 18-year-old kid, or man, I guess I should say, that drove roughly around 200 miles to move to a neighborhood that was had a high concentration of black people, to basically shoot as many black people as possible in New York State. And, you know, police know this or are alleging this based on a manifesto that he apparently uploaded in two parts to social media shortly before the shooting. Again, a lot of this is, again, being alleged by law enforcement, but the manifesto has been widely available online. And in it, he talks, you know, a number of racist theories, you know, not just against African-Americans, but also against immigrants of all colors, against Jewish people. But one of the bigger themes in it is about the Great Replacement Theory, or the so-called Great Replacement Theory. And that's this idea that immigrants, people of color, Jews are basically going to outnumber native born Americans, being white Americans, and basically kind of change the political structure of this country to make it more liberal, to make it more Democrat, and that, you know, the white race, so to speak, in this country would be on the decline in terms of economic power and political power. And so his theory, according to police and based on this manifesto, is that he wanted to shoot people of color to kind of stop this from happening, or to kind of make a point. And so that's kind of the driving force, the thinking right now behind the shooting in Buffalo.
Yeah. And what are the origins, the roots of this great replacement idea? Because it's not an American special, is it?
No, it's not. You know, a lot of it came about, obviously, during World War II. You know, when you're talking about it's deeply tied to anti-Semitism. But I would say that a lot of the more recent versions of it, at least in this country, kind of really started right here in the state of California, where I am in Los Angeles. And that was in the 1990s when the Republican Party were basically trying to hold on to facing demographic change with an influx of the children of mostly undocumented immigrants, Mexican immigrants, and, you know, fearing their political power slipping. And so they kind of, you know, went into this fear, tapping into the fear of white voters, saying, you know, the more resources we extend to immigrants, the more voting power we extend to them, the more we're going to lose power and we lose influence. And so there were a series of ballot propositions aimed at restricting rights and kind of curbing that influence of Mexican immigrants, which actually had the effect of a backlash and basically in a lot of ways moved California from a very Republican state to a very left Democratic state, which it is today, dominated in both houses of the legislature by people of color. And so California often is looked at in the U.S. as, you know, leading the curve on a lot of things. And so we've seen that, you know, broader in the U.S. with a lot of demographic shift where you have more people of color coming into power, just, you know, lots of different things. And we've seen in the backlash of former President Donald Trump. And so in some ways, this is kind of this culmination of things that have been percolating for the last 40 years and beyond that, obviously, in Europe and other places. But here in the U.S., it's kind of been tied deeply into our political system with the Republican Party, which is still mostly dominated by white Americans who are often older, looking at the Democratic Party, which is often a more multicultural, younger coalition, as, you know, taking power away from white Americans. So it's the same thing, same theory, just recycled decade after decade and looked at it in a different way.
Yeah. And it's treacherous territory, isn't it, when it meets the party political divide, particularly in the time of someone like Trump, obviously.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. And I think we're seeing that definitely here in the U.S. And I think it's compounded. I think most people would agree that, you know, we have a preponderance of guns on our streets. And so in this case, it's not just people who are just angry and upset and believing in conspiracy theories, but also have the ability to take their beliefs and actually make good on that by killing other folks, is what we saw in Buffalo last weekend.
Just dreadful. So this is deeply political, as you say, and Trump himself has amplified this replacement stuff in the past. past. He's got his sights on 2024, so he's still bubbling away in the background. What's your analysis of the Republican Party's response to the horrors we saw in Buffalo and to the spread of this replacement theory idea?
Well, there were a few Republican politicians, Liz Cheney, who's our in Congress, among them, who kind of, you know, admonished the next day after the shooting or the next couple of days after the shooting, the rest of the Republican Party for, you know, trafficking in this kind of great replacement theory and putting it out there on social media, on Twitter in particular. You know, we have conservative pundits that are doing the same thing and just basically admonishing the party for doing such things. But, you know, the response has been, unfortunately, what we've come to expect, which is pretty, you know, tepid and not really, you don't have great numbers of Republicans being like, you know, we disavow the replacement theory. They've kind of kept quiet. You know, the question really, I think, in the U.S. right now is how far will this go? Is this going to be one of those instances that just kind of goes away over time as people get distracted and move on to the next, you know, major tragedy or whatever is news cycle the next day, mm-hmm. or is this going to be something that's going to be treated as a larger issue and you're going to have more pressure on the Republican Party, particularly the Republican elected leadership and some of the media personalities on that side to actually, you know, not be, you know, trafficking this stuff in their daily speeches and tweets.
Mm. And I think it's fair to say that Chuck Schumer, one of the top Democrats, has made a point that this is the trafficking, as you describe it, is being helped substantially by Fox News in particular. He's written to Fox News and Rupert Murdoch, the owner, about this. But is traditional media, those outlets, the main problem? I mean, social media played a huge role in the Buffalo shooters' terrible outcomes. You know, what's the answer here?
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's really interesting. I mean, our media landscape, you know, I imagine is the case in different parts of the world as well. But ours is so split where you have people who are watching one particular network who, you know, who live in circles of far right wing social media, not just, you know, Twitter is like the least harmful. But we have, you know, 4chan and 8chan. And we have all of these platforms where people kind of have lived in their own little reality of conspiracy theories. And I think in a lot of what Chuck Schumer was railing about is what she has in various different ways in the past, along with other Democrats, is just the fact that we have an entire media ecosystem that is just basically serving lies to people for short-term political gain and how those lies can be very dangerous. And social media absolutely plays a part in spreading those lies. But I think, you know, traditional media in the sense of, you know, some of the conservative pundits and conservative writers that reinforce that and echo that because of their reach also make it far worse. So it's a combination of a number of things going
yeah.
on.
And Erica, you're a Black woman mm-hmm. writing about this stuff in America today. Do you feel personally under threat as a result of this climate?
Well, you know, it's writing this column was the first of many times that I've, you know, been thankful that I live in California, which is, you know, not to say that it's not, we know we had more voters that voted for Trump, at least by number anyway, than any other state in the U.S. because we're the most populous state in the U.S. But we also are a state where, you know, liberal politicians do dominate the legislature and all forms of government. So, well, I feel relatively safe. But, you know, I grew up in other parts of the country, in red parts of the country, and I have friends and family that are still live there. And so it's very much connected for me. And so it's while I don't personally feel threatened as a Black queer woman, I also don't, you know, I also don't take for granted that other people, my family, my friends, aren't under that threat where they live.
Yeah. Erica Smith, very good to talk to you. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me on.
Los Angeles Times columnist Erica D. Smith. More of that chat at the PM webpage.